Coming up on AI Haven't a Clue. AI hits the bullseye. 360.
They don't say that.
Bullseye.
108.
107.
Oh. Alexa has an update, but it's going to cost you. Honestly, when you read it.
It's boring, isn't it?
And we've got special guest Dr. Daniel Knapp in the studio.
I think there's a huge potential for both the kind of film and creative industry and also the advertising industry.
Yeah.
Autonomous little helpers that have the capacity not just to answer things, but to act on your behalf.
Hello and welcome. This is AI Haven't a Clue, the podcast where we explore the wild world of AI. I'm George Butler. Our very own tech expert is James Chandler.
Hello. Oh, we're still doing the
Gabbo. Is that your thing? Gobbo impression from last week?
Gobbo.
Gobbo.
Gabbo.
Hello, it's Gabbo the AI Thai. Welcome to AI Haven't a Clue.
Has he arrived yet? Is he here?
They haven't got back to us yet.
Oh, come on. Why on earth might that be?
I don't know, James. I will kill you when I arrive.
Maybe it was the mentions of kitchen knives times six was the reason they don't want to send us one of their toys.
If you don't know what we're talking about, listen to last week's episode.
Oh.
But for now, welcome. No more horror AI toy chat because we've got far too much to get through today.
It's plenty.
The latest in the world of AI news, which is we often talk about the good, the bad, and the weird, and that's on the way with Elon Musk news. We've got some big government stuff, and then something about the world's most famous darts player.
Okay, wow, here we go. Oh, good one for you. Harry Styles got a new album out.
Yes, Banana Milk and Heartbreak.
Very good.
As we named it last week. Also on the way, Dr. Daniel Knapp.
Oh, he's good.
Do you know Dr. Knapp?
No. I was going to say know him intimately. That's not the right turn of phrase.
I know. Well, you get up to him in your own time.
I'm exceptionally well. He is a brilliant analyst, predictor of trends, has a sort of crystal ball into the future around all sorts of things, but especially AI. It'd be fascinating.
Oh, that you sold it well. Mm. We've got your question coming up, your big thing. I've got something new for us later on. It's coming. Later. George's little thing.
Ah, it's Jane.
That's rude.
That is rude.
This is a family show. First, though, last week we covered a story about the rise of these tags that are emerging, which basically are put on videos and content to prove that they're made by humans and not AI. There were some interesting names. We thought we could do better, and we put the call out there. And we've had some responses.
You've crowdsourced it.
Would you like to hear them?
Yeah.
John said, humankind.
Okay.
Brain Soul said, made by people.
Does what it says in the tin.
Lisa. Hi, Lisa. Said, real hands. Real hands. Yeah. Could have done a pun there. Could have done R-E-E-L, but didn't.
Yeah.
Just went with. Pearman 1. Said, made without machines.
Like, without gluten, is I'm getting that sort of energy.
Made without machines. Final one is coming from Cocknose Dave 67, and it's analog made. James, are you okay? I think he fell off his chair.
Oh no, the last one. The last one was me. I added it in, and you said it, and that has tickled me. Because that is
right.
That's it, isn't it? That's the chemistry. That is just
okay. I see what you. God, I see what
Dave
you did there.
67.
Cocknose Dave 67.
Oh.
Well, also realise as I'm rereading this, it wasn't analog made. Thankfully, I didn't read out what it really says. Well, look, there we go. Some interesting ideas.
It's not cracked. I don't think it's cracked.
I'm not sure we've cracked it.
Fine. Draw a line under that.
My favourite from that list, made by people. No, made without machines.
Yeah.
That's kind of fun.
I want to see visuals as well, though. These are good. You know, they're all right, but, you know, visuals.
We could get AI to make some logos.
We could do. Yeah. Is that a good use of AI?
The irony.
Given what we know about sustainability, and is that a trivial use?
So that's an interesting point. When you were using artificial intelligence now, when you go to ask ChatGPT something, for example, do you often think about that? Do you often think, should I? Am I damaging the environment by finding out how long a salmon should be cooked for at 200 degrees?
I'm not thinking about that, but I talked to a parent whose children are intensely thinking about that.
I've heard that. I don't know if it's been taught in school, because I've heard this from other people as well, people are very conscious about
this. Very intentional about how they're using it. Millennials everywhere just sort of carelessly wrecking the planet by, how long do you bake a salmon for? What's 5 + 5 × 6?
25. Just ask ChatGPT. So you don't give a rat's monkeys.
No, I'm not. It's not sort of cognizant in my mind like I think it is for Gen Alpha, I guess, who are going to be the first sort of AI natives.
Because I do sometimes think it. I do sometimes. I'm like halfway through typing out something on ChatGPT. Yeah, like I'm halfway through asking it for forecasted temperature in Madrid in May or whatever.
Yeah,
and then I'm like, but like, is this a good, am I damaging the environment by searching for this?
Well, and I wonder if it's when you hit the return key, or does it start when you're tapping keys?
Well, that's a good point. No, I'm assuming the environmental damage starts when you hit search.
You think so? Not when you're doing the keystrokes.
Not when you're doing the keystrokes.
So when you delete it, actually you're all right.
I didn't say I deleted it. I said the thought popped into my mind.
Smashes return, and he wants to know what the weather is in...
It's getting hotter and hotter, thanks to my search into ChatGPT. Right, we have got a brilliant guest on the way, but first let's take a look at the news from the world of AI this week. And let's start with Elon Musk. It says here, Elon Musk has unveiled his own chip. James, I don't know why... This is a tech podcast, so I don't know why this is featured. Is it... Is it like a potato? Is it French fry?
Good.
Well, potato waffle. Do you remember Alphabet potatoes? Remember them? Smiley faces as well. They were good.
Sadly not.
No.
Sadly not.
Okay. Tell me.
Elon Musk is.
It was a potato joke. It was a potato joke.
The joke works.
Yeah. No. It was potatoes.
He has set out plans for a chip building microchip. I should clarify. Chip building collaboration between SpaceX, which is of course his. And Tesla, another one of his. He wants to produce 100 to 200 gigawatts of computing power per year on Earth, along with a casual terawatt in space.
All right, before we go anywhere, for us non-nerds, a terawatt, what's the context of that? What energy is that?
It's usually trillionaire is what we associate with him. We're also associating terawatts. A terawatt is 1 trillion watts. You're looking at me like you want more.
Yes.
So a typical UK home will use probably about 2 kilowatts at a time. So 1 terawatt could power up to 1 billion UK homes. So
1 billion?
1 billion.
Wow, okay. Yeah. So it's quite a
decent.
Big number.
He's doing that in space. So
in space, how is this possible?
We talked a bit about NVIDIA.
You've done it! Yeah, every time you say that, this plays!
There could be a shortage. You know, these semiconductor chips, they need very specific materials to build them. There could end up being a shortage of these. And what Elon is saying, that this project is very necessary because the current semiconductor suppliers cannot meet the demand for all of this AI and this robotics, and because he's into humanoids and all this stuff that we need. So that's why he's doing it. No timeline. And he hasn't got lots of experience in semiconductors. But
where in space is it? Like, you can't do this on the moon. Like, can you just go up into space and claim land as your own? This is very confusing.
Probably. I think we need a space expert. One thing I would say about Elon, he didn't really have any automotive experience. He didn't particularly have any experience around social media. I mean, you can kind of argue the pros and cons of this, but when he tends to hone in on an industry, he tends to compete and he tends to come out top. So, could be interesting. Watch his space.
Watch this. Pardon the pun.
Very good.
Moving on now to an Alexa update. Now, obviously, kind of Amazon's Echo with Alexa was, I guess, one of the first big mainstream popularized versions of AI, kind of as we know it, right?
Yeah, much more simple version, though. Really, really based around voice. There wasn't much going on in the background as we kind of know it now.
Well, we talked about how it's now, compared to the likes of ChatGPT or Claude, it's a bit rubbish. And you ask it a question and it doesn't really know the answer. And it's... I won't lie, James, it drives me crazy.
Times, they're changing, my friend. Amazon is rolling out Alexa Plus. We've talked about it weeks and weeks ago, an AI-powered upgrade to all of its Echo devices in the UK, the newer ones, at least.
Yeah, because I tried, when I saw this, I tried to get it on my Alexa, but you have to buy a new Alexa in order to get it.
If you've got an old one, have a look at the site. If you've got an old one, then it's not going to work. More conversational, Amazon are saying, able to follow context and will respond, wait for this, in a more natural, human-like way.
I've asked an Amazon Alexa contributor. Like, what do you mean? Who is an Amazon Alexa contributor? And why do they never know what I need to know?
Was it Alexa? Was it Gabo? We'll never know. Obviously, the stakes are higher. ChatGPT, we've got Gemini, there's Claude. You know, all of these are kind of raced ahead. $19.99 a month if you've not got Prime. But if you've got
Prime... Who doesn't have Prime? I know there's some London bubble thing I've ever said, but like people have Prime, right?
People have Prime. So you get it for free. The newer devices are going to get the access first. I think this will be good. Don't forget in what sits behind Amazon. They've got this huge ads machine, this incredible recommendation engine. I could see this really doing the whole, I think our buzzword for this week is probably agentic commerce. But the idea of just sort of putting things in your basket, it finding stuff for you. I mean, we're pretty comfortable with Amazon having our bank details and sort of doing things for us. You know, one click to buy, delivered in a click. This really is kind of the next stage. But yeah, Alexa gets a big old update.
It was like the big new thing, what, 10 years ago, maybe a few years ago. But it seems to have lagged behind where AI has gone in the subsequent years.
Well, if you think about what we've probably had in that time as well, is social media, which is very visual, very AV driven. We've seen TV that's now on computers and phones. Everything's been very, very visual. And I think what we've come back to, particularly around prompting and things like that, is actually voice is a far better way than trying to thump two thumbs into a tiny piece of glass and do it.
Okay, well, as soon as we get our hands on this Alexa Plus, we should give it a go. If anyone has already got it because they've got a new device, please do give us a review. James, are you a fan of heist movies?
Love them.
Well, picture this as a plot. One man, he's got his laptop open, and, well, that's the plot to this film, because Michael Smith has... been defrauding music streamers out of millions. What a, this is an AI heist, if ever I've heard of one.
That was a tenuous link if ever I've ever heard one. Yeah, he's been defrauding streaming platforms and, you know, by very nature, fellow musicians. He's been generating thousands of AI-generated songs and bots. He's netted over $10 million in royalties that haven't gone to real artists, poor old real artists.
But so basically he's created AI songs and then he's got a load of AI bots to listen to his AI songs and paid him royalties. And by the way, to get 10 million in royalties from the streamers, you're getting billions of listens.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. We're talking kind of cents and pence on this. He's charged with conspiracy to commit wire fraud. He faces up to 5 years in prison, plus a fine of, I think, $8 million. Something dollars. I mean, it's a big old number.
Yeah, still making profit, I should add.
They should really think
still,
about
still
that.
Making profit.
They probably should think.
Okay,
about
very,
that.
Very interesting. We will, well, I'm sure, keep updated with the heist plot of the year, Michael Smith, coming to Netflix very soon. Not Spotify, though. The audiobook version, though.
Too soon.
More on AI and the media now. So the government, who were very bullish several months ago, we had the minister on, very bullish about their kind of AI-first approach. Mm-hmm. Creativity, artists were sort of kind of almost put to the back burner. Things seem to be changing a bit now. They seem to be, unlike this government, buckling under pressure and doing a U-E.
You didn't say U-turn, but it's not quite a U-turn. It's a backtrack, and they've backtracked on AI and copyright. You'll remember we've been talking about this for a long, long time. Artists like Elton John, like Dua Lipa, have been calling for the government to do more around copyrighted content, specifically their copyrighted content and AI using it and them not being credited with it. It did look like Liz Kendall, who's the technology secretary, did look like she was going to move to support artists. She's come out and said that the government has listened and now has no preferred approach, which has not gone down famously with the creative sector.
So they're sitting on the fence.
It does feel like
they have splinters. I mean, again, who would have thought?
there is this balance. Yes, you have to protect creatives' rights, but you also don't want to hinder innovation and development with AI. And I think what Liz Kendall is saying is there really isn't, they can't find a consensus. Either side they take, they're either going to hold up innovation and we're not going to be a great place for AI companies to come and be brought up here. Or if you go the other way, artists just aren't going to be happy at all. We need a solution.
It's a tricky one, I think, because we've, I guess, as a nation, been famous for our kind of innovation. And through the years, we have been kind of a tech, a leader of tech and industry in many senses. But we're also world famous for our creativity and our music and our art. So I feel like this is interesting because it's kind of two things that we're famous for and they're sort of torn between which one to properly back. So I can actually sort of understand why they're trying to stay on the fence with this. I feel like if it wasn't the arts and creativity, perhaps there would be a slightly different stance and it'd be maybe more pro AI and technology.
Yeah, you think so. To wrap it up, no immediate legal changes are going to be made. The government is delaying reforms until a clearer, more widely supported solution is found.
Okay. Now, if you thought the plot of Michael Smith, the new heist thriller, stealing millions from Spotify was interesting,
I didn't think it was that interesting.
But it was one man behind a laptop for an hour and a half. Do you not like that? Is that not your thing? Well, perhaps Shy Girl might be yours. It's a new horror novel. It was set to be released, but last minute, it's been pulled.
Yeah, it's been cancelled in the US, and the UK publication has been halted by Hachette over AI authorship concerns. The publisher has said that it's committed to protecting original storytelling, but the author, Mia Ballard, has denied using AI, but this thing that she's written is absolutely riddled. I mean, anyone can see that it's probably written by her. She's saying that she hired an editor, and that editor may have introduced AI without her knowledge.
Wow, this is a plot is better than the book's plot.
Have we got some of this that we can read? Because honestly, when you read it,
I've got some. All right, here goes. I wear a pink dress, the kind that promises softness and delivers none. It's tulle, it's brittle and sharp, brushing against my fur like 1,000 tiny teeth, a cruel lover that bites with every move. Every scratch keeps me in place, a reminder of what I am. A pet, a thing shaped for looking, for praise, for command.
Are you still reading your ChatGPT prompts?
It's boring, isn't it?
I put this through one of those AI detectors. Can you guess what percent the AI detector thought it was AI?
Well, she's hired an editor, so maybe the editor's dabbled in a bit of AI. 15%?
100%. Two paragraphs worth.
It's an M-dash. There's genuinely an M-dash in this thing.
There is, yeah, incredible. Look at that. Oxford commas all over.
There's a rocket emoji there. that's wild. It's kind of shocking and scandalous, isn't it, really?
We should say by right of reply, it significantly impacted Mia Ballard. She says her reputation and mental health have suffered. She's pursuing legal action on this, but it feels to me like it's probably the first time that a major publisher has actually withdrawn a novel over thinking that it's...
But I don't get this, James, AI. Because the publisher obviously greenlit the book, commissioned the book, but also through that process must have read the book and gone, yeah, no, we'll take this, we'll put it out there. So I'm assuming something at the very last minute has come when they put this out to critics or for feedback and reviews. But the publisher must have been on board with this book right up until the last minute.
Yeah, there's got to be some accountability there. There's no way that you're going to... I think anyone reading this, it's fairly, fairly clear. There is no way in this world you're going to start sending that to critics to review, and it's only at that point where you're going to cancel it. So yeah, the post-mortem will go on in this one. But yeah.
I'm enjoying this week because it's been kind of weird and wacky stories, which I adore. None more so than this. World famous darts player, the teenage sensation Luke Littler. Is he still a teenager? I think he is. Yeah. He has trademarked his face.
You would think it would be like his right hand or some other thing about him. Yeah, he's trademarked his face. He falls in line with people like Matthew McConaughey and Cole Palmer, who have done the same to safeguard against AI misuse. Not on my hockey, mate, is anyone using Luke Littler's face. He's got lots of brand deals. KP Nuts is one of his big ones, which he wants to protect.
Fair enough.
Probably some other big ones
protect
in there as well.
Nuts.
UK experts are saying that trademarking is a workaround due to quite limited image rights laws, which help control commercial use and licensing. Luke Littler's a two-time world champion, we should say as well.
Yeah.
So he's big business involved.
Well, no, I looked this up online, James, and there is a lot of use cases of deepfakes of Luke Littler. Like, I mean, there must have been at least like 360.
They don't say that in
360.
Don't say that.
Bullseye.
108.
107.
Ah.
210.
One job. You can't just shout numbers.
90.
The
darts. Is that what they do in darts? Isn't it?
The inbox.
Bullseye.
Is just filling up. People
isn't
are.
That's what they do in darts.
This will
isn't
be
it?
The biggest switch off.
120. What's the number?
Jesus. Have we got any more news?
No.
I am.
That is it.
I'm at the end. David's head is in his hands over here. He's upset, George.
Listen, it was a darts-based joke. Get over it.
You've got to get your darts jokes.
It's a darts-based joke.
It's too much. You've got to come on.
Now, look, I thought this show's full of boring, complicated jargon terms, right? You're spitting out these AI-related terms all the time. And I was thinking to myself, we need to do something about this. This show is for people who want to explore the wild world of AI. And sometimes we don't understand these terms that you're giving us. So I thought we need to do something new in the show. And you don't know this is coming. No one knows this is coming, but it's right. A new thing. Because I thought, how can we explain popular AI terms,
right,
but break it down and make it accessible.
Okay.
Keep people engaged. That's the key thing. Sometimes I don't feel like you do.
Okay. Yeah.
So this is a new segment. Cue the medieval music. This is Shakespeare Explains AI. And this week, we have a Shakespeare production for explaining prompt engineering.
Right.
There's two characters. One's a scholar and one's apprentice. Right. And the apprentice. There's two options here. I can play both roles or you could play one of them.
I would be more comfortable with you doing both.
Okay, that's fine. The apprentice is going to be Northern.
Right.
Careful now.
Here goes.
Okay, yeah.
This is Shakespeare Explains AI. Just don't forget that.
Sir, this thinking engine vexeth me. I ask, your answers wander wild and free.
Then fault lies not within the engine's mind, but in the words thou choosest to assign.
Me words? I speak them plain, as one would do.
Aye, plain, but vague. The craft requires more view. To guide the mind unseen, thou must be clear, with context, bounds, and purpose set sincere.
So words are tools, not merely passing breath.
Indeed, each phrase may grant thee life or death of meaning. Ask thy careful art, and thou shalt steer the answer from the start.
Then prompt is key, not just the thing I seek.
Well spoke, the wiser question makes it speak.
I see, 'tis not the machine I must command, but how I shape the thought.
Shall I do my big thing for this week?
That was Shakespeare Explains AI.
I don't think
you can stop the music. You can stop the music.
Make
now.
That more complicated, but you've just done it.
What do you mean?
If you're on a run or you're doing a bit of DIY, you're just doing the school run, and you've just listened to that. I'm sorry.
Have you read Hamlet?
We're not going to do it. It won't happen again. Right, big thing this week.
Shakespeare Explains AI will return next week. So if there's anything you would like Shakespeare to explain, any AI terms, let us know. Email aihavenaclue@gmail.com. Vibe coding, maybe? Vibe coding next week? Could be vibe coding.
It's got a whole content series.
Yeah.
Don't you have a drama degree?
Well, I have a degree in performance studies.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you want to study that performance?
This is... I could critique it.
Critique it?
But I'm going to do that offline because I've got a big thing this week.
Is it Shakespeare Explains
AI?
It's
not Shakespeare. Yeah. It's okay. Even better. It's Clay Explained, which is this incredible Instagram, TikTok channel, satirical recaps of moments that have shaped our history, but with AI fingerprints. It's kind of like that stop motion claymation thing, but it's done by a bunch of creatives who work in TV and film. This is kind of their side hustle that they do. I mean, some of the stories are amazing. They've got Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor in there, the sort of the fall of Prince Andrew. They've got a bit on Keir Starmer. There's all sorts of things. They've got Trump, great guy.
Who's that?
It's phenomenal. It's phenomenal. You should check it out. I think you'd like this.
Okay.
The story behind it is fascinating, though. So they are human creatives who are saying we're refusing to let AI replace us. They did a post where they said we're getting lots of hate from people in the creative industries going, excuse me, do you know that AI is causing this huge plight of creatives? And they're like, well, yeah, we are those people. But what we figure is that if we actually engage and experiment with this new technology, surely that's better than burying your head in the sand. So they're making some great stuff. They're going to do some merch, which we seriously haven't given too much thought to, which I think we should.
We have merch.
Do we have merch?
No, we do. We have T-shirts.
You're counting the T-shirts?
Yes.
Oh, I mean like stickers people can put on cars. I'm talking about pencil sharpeners. Desk real estate is what I'm thinking. You know?
You know, think big. I like it.
Anyway, Clay Explained. It's absolutely fantastic.
I like that there's a line in the notes here that just says Jimmy Kimmel follows them.
He does.
Nice. Big. Hey, celebrate that.
We started in a pub. Jimmy Kimmel followed them. It blew up. They're getting millions and millions of views.
Do you think we should clip up Shakespeare Explains AI and send it to Jimmy Kimmel?
Move it on.
Because he might...
No.
He could... No?
No.
Maybe...
Merch? What about merch? Shakespeare Explains AI merch?
Let's talk about this afterwards, I think.
Right, should we do this week's listener question?
Yeah.
Sent in from Sophie in Kent. I like this. This is old school radio energy.
I like
energy.
What people say. Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Sophie in Kent. Hi. My boss sort of jokingly asked if I would accept a lower salary given that AI can do most of my job. I'm assuming she's not being serious, but how should I reply?
That's, well...
Fuck off.
I think you could start with that. I would maybe, I'd be slightly more intentional about my response. I probably wouldn't brush it off. This is one of those sort of half joking, but I am fully testing the waters.
What do we think Sophie does?
I was thinking something with like outputs. So just like outputting things, or she might be a sort of container for knowledge as she knows lots of stuff.
I reckon a designer. I can see maybe a graphic designer.
Could be a designer. I would change the premise of the question. If AI is doing more of the heavy lifting, then you could argue that your value should actually go up, not down. So if there's more output and it's faster and it's better quality, you know, you should be asking for a pay rise.
Pay rise!
Rather than a pay cut.
Tell her.
You could argue that you're a bit more valuable because you can deliver more impact. And I think if you're answering the question, don't focus on the stuff you're outputting, but focus on maybe the impact that it's having. There's a very obvious point here, which is there is a version of the world where that some roles are going to get cheaper, because if anyone with AI can do it, then of course the price is going to drop. You have to make sure, and I've been thinking about this a little bit recently, that you're not in a job where you just produce things that AI could do, or you just hold some knowledge that AI could sort of capture very easily. Wisdom, experience, the ability to make decisions, all of those things. Do you remember that quadrant we had, which is the future of jobs and the skills you're going to need in the future? Mm. It's all of those soft things, I think. So I think in terms of how you should reply, get the pay rise, you're actually adding more value, and make sure you're not just an outputter of things. Make sure you are someone who creates impact, and you're always going to need a human to do that.
Mr. Motivator. Let us
know how you get on, Soph. Yeah.
Let us know. So what are we thinking? So we go a big pay rise.
Yeah, big.
We do the classic art of the deal. We go big pay rise. We want 100% pay rise. Yeah. And then like, no, we can't do that. But okay, we'll do 20%. Okay, deal.
Should do it in your AI Haven't a Clue t-shirt that you're going to get as well.
Yes.
Stick good it point. To them.
Because everyone that asks the questions on the podcast receives an AI Haven't a Clue t-shirt. Thank you. I did forget that.
You did.
I did, but now
I'm talking about merch.
You can drop us your question at by emailing aihaven'taclue@gmail.com if you are in our patron. I reckon Sophie probably is.
Probably.
Yeah. If you get a pay rise, you bloody well should be. Come on. If you are in our Patreon and you ask a question, it goes to the top of the pile. Yeah. Some people would say that's unfair.
How big's the pile?
It's...
You're looking through the pile now. It's a physical pile, is it?
It's thick.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, no, it's really thick.
Pile.
Yeah, good luck, Sophie. If you get fired, if your boss is like, you genuinely don't do anything, you use ChatGPT for everything, should she write into you?
No,
Good. Right. Well, I was thinking we could fit in one extra episode of Shakespeare Explained to AI,
save it till next week.
Do you want to save it for next week?
We're tight on time.
Okay. Well, in that case, should we have a guest?
Yes, we would like a guest.
Well, this week on the podcast, we're joined by the brilliant Dr. Daniel Knapp, Chief Economist at IAB Europe. Daniel is an expert in the future of TV, video, social media, AI-driven marketing, and the sociology of algorithms. Someone you know very well, right, James?
Yeah, he does a lot of work with us. He also advises other media companies. He talks to governments, tech firms all around the world. His insights have appeared in the New York Times, The Guardian, Variety, to name a few.
Yeah.
He is a regular speaker and a brilliant one at that on AI, on data, on things like media policy. We are talking to him today about how AI is reshaping media, reshaping marketing, and of course, our everyday lives. We get into a little bit about what the future might hold too.
Daniel Knapp, thank you so much for stopping by the show. James has already told us a lot about you. Mm. I think you said earlier you know Dr. Daniel intimately.
Not intimately.
You said intimately.
I mean, I know him well. Intimately isn't the right thing.
We've this got is your chance.
Familiar.
Yeah, I was about to say, this is your chance to kind of make clear. You don't really have to, you know him quite that well.
He is an eminent mind on the world of AI. I think we're going to have a fascinating conversation.
Did you want to do the thing before we start?
ChatGPT roulette is something we do with every guest. We want to know what's the last thing you've searched in your LLM of choice. We are notoriously not very good at this. What have you got this week?
The last thing I searched for was about burning calories, running versus walking, what the difference is.
I could have told you that.
Well, I'll tell you why I searched for it, because the thing I searched for before was the recipe for Blacklock's white chocolate cheesecake.
Right.
So maybe I felt like I kind of needed
to walk off the cheesecake.
Or run, as it turns out.
Yeah, interesting.
James?
I wanted a good Pinot Noir and I was stood in Majestic Wine. Probably spent a bit too much, but it's another story.
Oh,
Daniel, wow us.
I split things up. My professional LLM is Claude, and privately, I use ChatGPT. Claude, it's actually agentic commerce skepticism outlined positions for me on what the yes-sayers and the naysayers say about agentic commerce. I wanted to round up the debate. Mm-hmm. And ChatGPT was, what can go wrong on an old Maserati engine? Should I buy one for £9,000?
And what did ChatGPT say?
Don't do it.
Before we get any further, what was it? Agentic what?
Commerce.
What is agentic commerce?
Agentic is the new craze, right? We move from talking about LLMs and chatbots to agents. So autonomous little helpers that have the capacity not just to answer things, but to act on your behalf. And that has kind of taken the media world, which I'm at home at, by storm. One of the big things that actually James and I have been working on is kind of retail media, you know, how Tesco and others are starting to sell advertising. And now there's some speculations about what's going to happen if you, in a sense, give an agent your credit card, a little LLM helper, that not only searches the right product for you, you know, be the car, be it washing up liquid, but actually completes the transaction for you.
Mm. How does that make you feel?
Well, we have talked about this a little bit, haven't we, really? And how we are maybe starting to move into the territory where we've all got our kind of own AI PA. Because that makes it a bit softer, doesn't it, than agentic agent? But no, I think it's interesting. I mean, do you feel like as a society we're not quite there yet, and people don't feel comfortable with it, or actually, is it starting to become something people are open to having in their life?
Well, let's put it this way. There's always a gap in the advertising industry between talks on panels on LinkedIn and kind of the public perception of things and what's really happening under the hood. So there's a lot of hype about it. And I think there are some, in particular in the consultancy field, who would love this to take off, right? So, you know, charge for some day rates to kind of implement those little agents, etc. But I'm a skeptic. Two things. Technology doesn't drive consumer behavior. There's a thing called, a clumsy word, technological determinism. And we had that time and again in the history of technology. Just because something is available, it's going to change everything. The recent good example is like things like the Arab Spring, for instance. Just because we have social media access now, that suddenly a democratic world will emerge. We had it even with one of my favorite books. It's called When Old Technologies Were New, which talks about the history of electric light, actually, and the telephone, and had this kind of utopian visions of, you know, how media were being projected to the sky and the clouds, etc. Never happened. But the point with agentic commerce is, I think from a consumer perspective, shopping is not a problem to be optimized away. Mm. It's actually something that we enjoy doing. Mm-hmm. It's part of human psychological makeup. It gives us, as shallow and superficial as it may be, a sense of being and a sense of joy. And do we want some tech bros optimizing away our joy? Maybe not really.
Mm. And it goes back to the heart of what we actually need AI for and what we don't need it for. Daniel, how did you get into all of this?
It was purely by accident, or not really. I've always been intrigued by media. I actually wanted to become a journalist when I was a kid.
Ah.
But then a media journalist, right? A journalist writing about media. Then I moved into policy. I started in Germany, as you can hear from my accent, at the State Chancellery in Düsseldorf. Ooh. Who studied in 2001 on onliners and non-liners, who was online, who was offline.
Where were we back then? Do you remember?
I think we're like at 60% online or something. With a wow. There's a lot of road left, and in particular the silver surfers, as we called them. Yes. Back then, you know, all these old terms, they were not online yet, and we wanted to get them online. So that's kind of where I started, and then I kind of had a keen academic interest to see how does actually media change society, or how does society change media in both ways. And I was wanting to pursue an kind of academic career, but then realized, you're not really a master of your own destiny if you do that. There's more politics and academia than, I think, in the largest corporate office in the city of London, if you will. And I always like to control my own destiny. So I needed some money for my PhD, and I started a job as an analyst. This little side gig turned into a keen interest in the economics of media. How is it funded? Who benefits from it? Mm. Which media channels are actually thriving, and why is that the case? And that has kind of never left me. And then, of course, the AI wave came in. That was also I was talking about surveillance and algorithms in my academic career, and suddenly these two worlds became one, and happy ever after.
Successful. You touched upon the 2001 online versus offline. Is that comparable to where we are today with AI versus don't want to touch it, hate it, not interested?
That's a great analogy, actually. I looked at some recent data on AI search adoption. So do we go to Google, do we go to Bing, or do we open ChatGPT and others to find information? Overall, you know, big picture, things haven't changed too much. Of course, Google has an AI mode. It's always embedded in these browsers, but this kind of dedicated quest to use a different interface. Overall, it's tiny. But if you look at early adopters, so those who have been there day one or kind of first 3 months since the technology came out, for them, nearly 50% of all searches are actually coming through those new interfaces. Mm. So there is a sizable cohort of users for whom this has rapidly become default mode. I want to caveat that quite quickly. I think you guys have all seen kind of in the news, kind of these statistics, how quickly have technologies been adopted? How long did it take Facebook, right, or Meta, to get like a billion users? How long did it take for the telephone to be, connected everywhere in the UK? And you see, the more recent the technology, the steeper the curve. Mm. But it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy, because each new curve is happening within a more sophisticated distribution platform, the internet, which succeeds innovation so quickly. So you can't really compare it, I think, apples to apples.
Will you talk a bit more about that? Because you would have seen so many waves in technology and media and advertising. You know, you think about mobile, you think about social media, you think about commerce. Is AI moving in the same way as those things? For me, it just feels like it's moving at breakneck speed. It's just moving a lot faster than maybe the things that have come before it.
it's very much, I think, in the eye of the beholder. Mm. I think there's a risk with AI that the gap between people, certain cohorts, demographics, is going to be wider than ever. Because, you know, the barriers to entry are very low. Everybody can operate ChatGPT. And I saw Gen Z people, which I love to kind of study from the media behavior perspective, just talking into it and not even typing anything. But then sophisticated use, how do you, in a sense, build a product out of it? How do you use context engineering and those things? There are kind of high barriers to entry. And despite all the disruption about software jobs going to end, et cetera, it is still fairly niche behavior to do this in a sophisticated way. But probably, I think there's a difference, a very important difference in the kind of history of media. Because AI isn't a platform. It's an infrastructure and a way of processing information.
Yeah.
Right? Social media, we had a platform, we logged on, a visual interface. It was on the UI layer. We could see with our eyes. Mm. But a lot of the AI adoption that we're seeing in the world is hidden underneath the surface. We don't see it. It becomes part and parcel of products and also consumer platforms that we already use. Did AI spark a new bank? No. Are banks using AI for fraud detection, KYC? Yes.
Yeah.
Google's success with AI is another example. Meta, massive advertising machine, billions of dollars, growing fast despite a weak economy. Why? Because under the hood, they've built optimized AI systems to bring the right ad to the right person at the right time. So I think there, a lot of innovation is happening there. So AI isn't necessarily creating new platforms, but augmenting the capabilities of existing ones.
Mm. How do you find we're doing in the UK? In comparison to kind of other countries, where they are with their AI development and adaptability, are we ahead of the curve? Are we lagging behind?
I mean, the UK has kind of always been a cradle for innovation, and particularly when it comes to computers and AI. Think of Alan Turing. Think of cracking the Enigma. Yeah. All of that stuff. You know, we got this, I think, amazing pioneer heritage in computer science. Incredible people, very early pioneers. DeepMind, but now an American company. So I think from a business culture perspective, we risk losing ground if we're not creating better conditions for businesses to thrive in the UK. And I think downstream, it also has implications for consumer adoption. Because if there's kind of deeper understanding and kind of quest and curiosity for those things, I think it affects both the professional and the private. The UK is, of course, always kind of the spillover market, you know, the first, you know, wave from the US that kind of comes across the Atlantic, same language. So that creates, I think, an kind of adoption plus for us. Mm. And it has always been a technologically very keen market, which you can also see in kind of my home industry advertising, where the UK is far more digitized than any other market in Europe. And we don't have, in contrast to Germany, where I'm from, this inherent technological skepticism, right? Think of Germany when the war came down, the GDR. You may remember that amazing movie, The Lives of Others, where they had all these little listening devices buried in the wall. That's a collective memory that still hampers technology adoption, and particularly AI. Mm. I see that with clients, there is a fear, inherent fear that AI, in a sense, will recreate these surveillance conditions that Germany has escaped from. We don't have that in the UK.
Tell us about professionally how you're using AI. You've got this incredibly neat tool I know you've talked about, and you're able to listen to lots and lots of earnings calls. AI's been able to speed up that process, which would take a human or you hours and hours and hours to do. Give us a flavour of how you're using it.
So I became an economist by accident, and that, of course, means I need to crunch through a lot of data. It's a very time-consuming job. And the frustrating thing was, presentation deadline was next morning. It was 7 p.m. and I was still collecting the data and didn't even have time for the analysis. And this, I think, a problem that many in my trade or the analyst trade face. It takes so long to bring it all together, and the valuable time, the brain power, the analysis, you don't have time for that. Mm. And AI has completely changed that for me. So one example is, I need to understand, what are companies doing? How are they investing in advertising? How are they overall allocating budgets? And I can't read the boring earnings call transcript of the quarterly earnings of every company. Impossible.
Even for you. But
there is something, this concept, and it came actually from literary studies called distant reading, which was an approach to say, instead of reading Hamlet, right, let's map relationships between entities between the actors to understand how frequent each one occurs in which constellation. Let's apply the same concept to earnings calls and see how often are certain terms mentioned in which constellation to see what are patterns, etc. And suddenly a new world opens up and you can see growth trends across sectors, across companies that you could never see before. Right? Another example, I'm using little economist intern agents now to collect data from the Office of National Statistics, pre-crunch that for me. So honestly, I now have 80% more time for analysis, and that is absolutely mind-blowing.
So that really is delivering on the promise of AI, which it can do all of that sort of stuff that takes a long time but isn't actually that value, and you've got more time to think about it critically.
But I think there are many people who are disappointed by that promise, because what they do, they go into the chat interface and type something. And we're seeing the shift, of course, which we may have discussed on the podcast before, from prompt engineering, you know, the new skill that came up on LinkedIn, let's say, who was at McKinsey, said the data scientist is a sexist job of the 21st century, 2012. Look how quickly that changed, right? Suddenly it was the prompt engineer. And that was last year. This year, it's about context engineering, not asking the perfect question, but providing the agent with a kind of mental scaffold. Who are you? In which role are you speaking? What are the guardrails? What should you exclude? What should you include? And building that scaffold for the agent is transformative when it comes to the result that AI can produce for you. Yeah. And tinkering with that is something that people should do more.
Any top tips for people that want to do it more?
Read lots of blogs. Go on YouTube, Elon Musk aside, go on X. There's a fantastic kind of repository of information. It's actually too much. I bookmarked so many things. Yes. But go to the tutorials, even of the providers, OpenAI, Claude, et cetera. Really, really good stuff on how you get started. So the first thing you do is AI reads very well markdown files. They're kind of text files.
Right.
Create these text files. Keep them short in the beginning. 10, 20 rows, says something about you. I am so-and-so. I am speaking as. Exclude M dashes. Keep sentences short and precise. And an end. That already helps. And then create other files on top of that. Skills. Think like so-and-so. Let's say a corrector skill. Critically reflect on what you've said. Only give me output when you're 100% sure, etc. And bit by bit building those files creates a much higher return on time with AI.
Yeah. Can I talk about ads for a second? We've talked a bit about Meta and that huge machine and how AI is making that bigger and better. Google as well, baking more and more. And of course, there's some new players to this market as well. People like OpenAI who are testing ads at the moment in the UK. What's your thinking on those new entrants that could come to market? Is there enough space for new entrants, or are the big ones just going to gobble up all the ad money?
The nice thing is when you look at the advertising space, it's kind of Groundhog Day, right? In a sense, any scaled consumer business, right? Any business with lots of users that needs to make money realizes we must use ads. Subscriptions and others aren't enough.
Yeah.
Everyone defaults to that. Good companies who say publicly, we'll never run ads. You later they'll have ads.
BuzzFeed.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, so OpenAI started.
GPT.
Yeah, exactly. Great point. They said no ads. Now they have ads, right? To reach 1,000 people in ChatGPT, you need to pay nearly $60 to do that.
Wow.
That is for advertising pretty high. Mm. That's the same price that Netflix asked for one of the first video ads that they showed. That's pretty steep.
If you were to do something on, I don't know, Instagram or TikTok or a comparable place, what's the difference in cost?
Oh, much lower in the auction. I mean, for something that's like pretty broad target, you might be paying less than £1.
Yeah.
So you're paying £60 for something that you might only pay £1 for elsewhere. Yeah.
That's a novelty effect.
Yeah.
You know, you're the first advertiser, right? It's something that you, the real value is in the PR and the buzz you create around that, not the ad itself. But that will change. Those costs will come down very quickly. The question really is, what kind of ads are they going to show? And that's a real problem for AI, because the use of AI is based on consumer trust.
Mm.
You need to trust the answer. Imagine suddenly you got an answer sponsored by so-and-so.
Yeah.
Would you still trust that answer? And that's also why Perplexity, who was the pioneer of AI agent ads, moved away from it, saying it doesn't work with our model, it erodes consumer trust. And this is why OpenAI is so cautious. They're not putting ads in the answers, but they're putting little banner ads, little display units around the content. So they're trying to keep the content pure. The algorithm is sacred in a sense. That's going to be crucial for consumer adoption. One false move and you lose all trust.
Yeah.
But can you make, let's take an OpenAI, a ChatGPT. can they make enough money through little banner ads, or inevitably is the advertising going to have to infiltrate the content? And if the answer, we'd love to know the answer. If it is yes, what's the impact of that?
How much for what is the question? The costs, right? Think of all the investments, the data center costs, etc., are so high. Ads can probably not going to absorb that anytime soon. Yeah. I did some back of the envelope calculations, and globally, OpenAI 2026 is probably going to capture 500 to 600 million pounds in ads globally. Probably around less than 10% of that will go to the UK. But that's tiny compared to the costs that they have in kind of keeping that operation alive. And to really make money from ads, you need more than users. You need sophisticated algorithms to find out what moves the needle, what makes a consumer tick, right? This is something that the large platforms have been able to do very well, but it's incredibly hard, even with the backing that Sam Altman and others have, to replicate that. So I'll see there's a space for them, but it's not going to be the next Google or Facebook anytime soon.
We've talked a lot about advertising in LLMs, and I know that's your job, and that but also it's because
what do you think I do?
Well, you do something that well, don't you? I don't know.
Do you call people and sell ads, James?
I think there's something in tech ads or something. I don't know. You tell me, and I just go. It's like when you talk about running, I just fall asleep.
Right.
No.
Right.
But we talk about it a lot because it's going to change what AI is to everybody, right? And as we've seen with social media, funded, as you've talked about, through advertising, it's changed the world. So it's important. And that's why we constantly are talking about advertising. And some people who listen to this podcast who don't work in advertising might go, well, why do you keep bringing it up? Well, it's because it's going to have a seismic impact on the future of this technology, which is going to have a seismic impact on the future of the world.
Yeah, you're right. You said you're a skeptic, but I wonder what excites you about AI.
It's more the under the hood stuff, right? The ability to automate things end to end and to make things more efficient, I think really excites me.
Yeah.
It might be boring, but I think that's incredible. In advertising, think of it, you need to measure things, you need to plan where do the ads run, in which frequency, you need to optimize the ads, etc. And these used to be all separate functions, silos with their own different logic, and that's all coming together.
Yeah.
The other thing that really excites me is creativity. Something that, again, is a fierce debate. I read an article in an art magazine, actually, on AI about its vampiric tendencies to leech off content and intellectual property from others and kind of ingest it. But I think there's a huge potential for both the kind of film and creative industry and also the advertising industry.
Yeah.
The ad industry has been obsessed with metrics and data. And the great ads, right? Remember the old Guinness ads on TV, et cetera.
Yeah.
That's been lost, kind of a lost art in a sense. And one of the things is that AI will reduce the entry costs. Everybody can do an ad, but new things will become creatively possible. And I'm an optimist here. Think of the movies like Godzilla, the old first animation movies.
Yeah.
There was kind of paper mache figures. In the end, if your creative idea is good, AI is the new papier-mâché. It's a new kind of exoskeleton of representing the world.
Do you think a lot of industries are burying their heads in the sand?
No.
Let's take the film industry. Are they being foolish, in your opinion, by going, we're not AI, no AI, go away, this is bad?
I think they're actually pretty innovative. There's some things to protect business windows, what's running on the cinema first, what's coming on pay TV later, etc. But you see a lot of new studios pop up, AI creative studios. Kind of little challenges to the Hollywood studios, end-to-end kind of AI production at a fraction of the cost, right? I think this is something quite exciting. And we're also seeing television companies, a lot of the kind of little reels you see between the content, you know, the show and the ad break, that's already often AI produced, right? So I think there's quite a lot of potential in the industry. It's just how do I protect the creative USP that I have, because the industry is still reeling from the disruption of distribution.
Yeah.
The internet put distribution costs to zero, right? And that was, in a sense, the costs of moving bits went to zero. Now the cost of creating bits goes to zero. And that, of course, scares many people, and business models will be under pressure. But we always forget human ingenuity and entrepreneurialism, that with every new technology, we will create new things.
Yeah.
What's coming next? What should we keep our eyes on for the near future?
forget about model benchmarks. That's something that go through the press
you're
a lot.
They're obsessed with the model benchmarks, aren't they?
What's a model benchmark?
A new version of an LLM comes out, 4.5, right. And it's a top of the... But everyone that comes out is top of the benchmarks. Yeah. If you're not top of the benchmarks, no one
wants it. Solves a math problem slightly faster with higher accuracy and, nails the SAT score, even more, et cetera, right? You're like top sophomore, whatever, player. That's the wrong way of looking at it. It's about, what really excites me is new applications, how ordinary people can start creating things and in a sense, cross the mind execution barrier. Mm. And I've seen that myself. How many people have excellent ideas, but struggle to put them to practice because they don't know how?
Yeah.
The costs are too high. They don't have the right professional or personal networks to help with that. And suddenly, with AI, in a sense, imagination can turn into reality within minutes. Mm. And I had a moment of that. Just a couple of weeks ago, Perplexity Computer came out. I was in the Eurostar train under the Channel Tunnel with incredibly poor Wi-Fi. I typed in a couple of prompts, and when I exited the train, a full analysis dashboard with data and interactive website was ready. I'd been wanting to do this for months. And suddenly, within 20 minutes, it was there.
Wow.
I think that's really exciting. We talk about creators a lot, in the YouTube, Instagram creators. But there's another new breed of creators, and that's kind of the AI creators. Mm. And that's not like creating media, but that's creating anything, in a sense, anything in the virtual world that people can now do.
It's been a real pleasure having you on, Dr. Daniel Knapp. Thank you so much for joining AI Hammer Crew.
Thanks so much for having me.
Dr. Daniel Knapp, what a brilliant, fantastic guest.
You didn't call him doctor throughout, and I know he's going to be pretty peeved with
Do you reckon?
Yeah.
Do you think he might...
Pretty big on that.
Am I on his blacklist?
He was as good as I said he'd be, wasn't he?
He was brilliant, really fascinating, interesting man. Told us something really quite interesting off mic, kind of at the end, but he was going to say it on the podcast, so he won't mind us saying. He had a cool stat about what, like, a Pixar film costs to produce versus if you got an AI media company to make it. The difference was, I think, 200 odd million versus £800,000.
Yeah,
now, obviously, the caveats there is that a lot of that is creativity and minds and people writing scripts and developing characters. And I think he's, merely looking at the animated elements of it. But it did make me think, his point about the distribution model, how in the mid-noughties, you went from paying for everything to getting everything for free, getting all of your media, everything, without having to pay a penny. Obviously now the playing fields are almost evening up a little bit in the sense that content is now being created for a lot less. Yep. So it kind of reframed my thinking a little bit. Maybe it's kind of optimism for platforms like cinemas, where at the moment the model it's kind of breaking a little bit at the seams, and maybe the AI is going to help save some of the traditional platforms who are quite worried about AI coming in.
As in the cost of producing a blockbuster film was so high, therefore, cinema, maybe the scales are tipping a little bit. He surprised me when he said that he was sceptical. And I've always thought about him as a sort of this optimist around things, but he's kind of like a realist around this stuff. I love the example he was using as well about listening to all these earnings calls, which he could never, ever do kind of on his own. I mean, it would just take him an eternity. Gets AI to do that. And he genuinely has got more time to do the analysis on it, to do the sort of slight critical thinking. And he's got, he's got like intern agents set up, which, well before you'd have hired some interns from somewhere, he's now got them kind of running around doing some stuff for him. Yeah, fascinating.
Lovely stuff, James. On that note, we will say goodbye. We're back next week with more AI Haven't a Clue and more Shakespeare Explains AI.
Possibly.
A huge thank you for listening. A huge thank you to Dr. Daniel Knapp. If you do have a question for us, a weird AI story I want to contribute to the show, we would love to hear from you. You can email us at aihaveanaclue.com. You can also support the show via our Patreon and also check out our Substack, which has a weekly roundup of some of the biggest news from the world of AI. If you fancy subscribing, rating and sharing the podcast with a friend, you might have more than one. You might not just have the friend, you might have loads. Multiple.
Yeah.
James just has one. And it's me.
That's not strictly true.
We would love it if you to do that. A huge thanks to Team AI Having a Clue.
OGs.
Yes, Molly, David, and Alex. And until next time, James, remember,
stay curious.